we hope that that wasn't like watching, you know, a slideshow of a friend who went on a vacation that you were completely uninterested in. We wanted to put together a little video to kind of document our surfing mission trip. And I'm going to say a few words to kind of give an overview of the trip, and then I'm going to pass the mic and the folks on the panel who were on the trip with us. They're going to share what was most impactful for them. But I should start out by saying that the organization that hosted this trip was not our church, but Surfers Helping Kids. And if you haven't heard our story, it was started by Dan Colburn, the guy sitting here next to Emma, and I. We used to meet every Thursday for breakfast and talk about the meaning of life and talk about spirituality and compassion and how to make the world a better place. And during those times, we were also planning a mission trip to El Salvador, and I'm sorry, a surfing trip to El Salvador. And Dan said, "Hey, why don't we do something to give back to the community while we're there?" And so we did our first trip a year ago, and it was kind of we called it a day of sharing, where we gave a lot of donations, including dental hygiene items and clothing and stuff. And when we came back, we thought, man, that was really fun, but we wish we could do something more significant, something more substantial in terms of service. And so we knew that that would take funding, and we knew that that a lot of people are more likely to give if it's a tax write-off. And so we got the original six or seven guys that went on that trip, and everybody pitched in $120. We hired a lawyer, and we got 501c3 status. So Surfers Helping Kids is a nonprofit that stands alone from the church. And our mission is simply to gather surfers together around that common interest to go and serve children and families in impoverished areas. We do work locally, but we also do work in Central America. And so far, both of our trips have been to El Salvador. And so we gathered this band of ragamuffins together and a few more, and we got on an airplane the day after Easter. My wife reminds me never to do that again, because Easter time is the most busy time for pastors. But we left the day after Easter on April the 2nd, and we stayed till the following Monday, April the 9th. And while we were there, we did a lot of really good work. One of the most impactful things for me, and you'll hear from the group here, was that we worked at the Remar Orphanage. And there's a slide, I think, that can kind of show you a little bit about that. We did some work at the Remar Orphanage, and we showed up. We played a lot of games with the kids. And we played dodgeball, and it was so funny to watch some of these guys try to dodge the balls of the kids. And after playing games and spending time with them, a lot of them wanted to use our phones because they didn't have cell phones. They wanted to watch YouTube videos. We also hosted a movie night with pizza, and we were told that the kids at the orphanage, most kids in El Salvador, never get pizza unless the gringos come and buy it for them. And so it was really a treat for them to have pizza. We watched a movie with them. We held a lot of these kids, and it was a wonderful experience. Also, we donated 50 t-shirt dresses made by ladies at my previous church, Shepherd's Community United Methodist Church. They have a ministry there called Prayer Shawl, and they purchased a bunch of t-shirts and that were large, and then they sewed skirts around the bottom, and we were able to deliver those, and you saw those in the video there, so they were really happy to get that clothing. And then in addition to working at the orphanage, we also installed portable water filtration systems. We discovered that many of the people there have been drinking contaminated water for a long time, and it frequently makes them sick. And so working with an organization called Filters of Hope, we were able to install water filtration systems. And that was really rewarding, because when we left, for the very first time perhaps in their life, they were able to have clean drinking water on a regular basis. And you'll hear more about that as well. In addition to doing the water filtration, we also did grocery delivery. So we packed, I can't remember how many, 10 or 15 big bags of groceries, and we delivered them to people's homes. And while we were doing the water filtration and the grocery delivery, we actually were invited into their homes, which was really eye-opening for us. You might hear some of the folks up here talk about that. And we were able to really spend time with them and ask them about their family and share our stories. And in addition to this, we also did a beach day, which is the next slide, and we partnered with a company in El Zante, which is our new favorite wave, I think. We partnered with a group there called Saferos, and we had a beach day. We taught I think it was 20 or 25 kids how to surf. We did surfing lessons. We played games on the beach, including soccer. And then at the end, we got them together, and we had a Subway lunch, which was a treat for them. And every time we gathered together, I told them about how much God loves them and how much we love them as a way of encouraging them as well. And we also, for this community, there are a lot of folks that donated board shorts. A lot of these kids want to surf, but they're surfing in pants or something other than board shorts that don't wick water very well. So we got a bunch of board shorts, and we were able to donate those as well. And then, in addition, we had another movie night where we did pizza. You saw some of these guys. Nick was serving the big trays of Coca-Cola, which was a treat to them as well, or sodas. And during some of these times, we did board giveaways. And so through a partner organization called Share the Stoke, we got three brand new Firewire surfboards. If you're not a surfer, I can tell you those boards are really nice boards, and they're very expensive. And we were able to give these boards away to three impoverished but worthy children. And we worked with our partners on the ground to discern who these kids might be. And so that was pretty awesome to see their face light up whenever they got these surfboards. So these are a few things that we did. We also surfed some world-class waves. The waves were just off the chain that week. It was like way overhead all week long and so fun. But so we got to do a little bit of surfing in addition to our serving. But having given that overview, I'm gonna pass the mic to Jim, and it's going to come this way. And they're going to say what was most impactful for them. And I want to say the reason why we're holding this extra mic pack is so we can get a clear audio for our video and make this available to people who couldn't be here today. So at this time, I'm going to turn it over to Jim Dale. And if you guys could just introduce yourself and say a little bit about who you are and where you come from, that would be helpful too.
Hi, I'm Jim Dale. I grew up here in Cocoa Beach, and if anybody recognizes me, it might be because I'm your Publix pharmacist. To me, the most impactful part of it was giving away the water filtration systems. And in one place in particular was a very difficult place to get to, with a lot of scary turns. And we actually had to walk the last quarter mile of it because our vehicle couldn't do it. And we met with an extended family that were just so grateful, and so it was just a really emotional experience. The patriarch of the family actually prayed over us instead of vice versa. And I would say that to me was the highlight of the trip, is that particular family.
I'm Carolyn Willis. I lived in Cocoa Beach for about 10 years now. I'm one of the city commissioners here. I say that one of the most impactful parts of the trip were when we got to visit. There was several days we got to go visit families. And in El Salvador, I saw there was a good separation between the really poor and the well-off. And the really poor were really poor. They were living in these one-room shacks made of corrugated metal, and some of them had foundations made of tires stacked up. And I guess I didn't realize people still live like that anymore. So they had pets that you could see their ribs through, that they just didn't have enough food to give them. And I noticed that every time we went to one of their houses, either to help install water filtration devices. A lot of them didn't have running water. They collected water in community from community tanks and brought them back home in their 5-gallon water jugs. When we went and did stuff like that at their house and delivered groceries, we would always ask them if they wanted us to pray for them, anything in particular in their family. And they never asked for anything like, I need a better house, which, I mean, to our standards, we definitely would, by far. They always asked for, can you please pray for my family, for health for my family, health for, you know, I have diabetes, or they never asked for anything materialistic. And to me, that was really eye-opening, because I guess if that were for me, I'd be trying to find a better house or car or something. So, and they were all very appreciative and so glad that we were there and very welcoming. So I'd have to say that was the most impactful part of the trip. And they were all like that. So definitely, definitely a great experience.
Good morning. I'm Nick Kindred. I'm a transplant also to the area. We live in Merritt Island, my wife and I. And I guess probably you guys talked about a couple things that I really, especially Carolyn, you just said about the way the people never prayed for material stuff. They always prayed for the family and stuff. That struck me. But, you know, I've been on some surfing trips before in the Central America with Jim. Jim kind of pulled me into this, which I'm glad he did. And you always see these little shacks by the roadside as you're traveling. You never really get to go into them. So this was a really cool experience to actually go in and meet the people. And I was taken back. It wasn't what I expected. And I don't know if it's my arrogance or what, but I expected, I don't know what I expected, but when we got there, the people were very articulate. They were humble. They were gracious. And a lot of them, you know, some of them said they were honored to meet Americans, which kind of took me back too, because sometimes you think America has a, you know, a bad image in places like this, but they were very gracious of us coming and helping them out. I would say one thing I take away from how it impacted my life is that I realized with such little effort that you can make a difference in people's lives. You know, I mean, these water filters cost $50, and you know, it can give them up to 10 years of clean water. And our group was impacted by the water, because some of us actually, you know, got a bug from it. So I understand how that went, you know. And but you know, it could be a life-threatening thing to some of the little kids. You know, it is a life-threatening thing. So just, you know, I think going forward, I'll probably want to do more mission work eventually, just because I see the impact that little bit of effort can do for families, you know. So
thanks. That's good. Is this on? All right, so my name is Dan Colburn. I lived in Cocoa Beach, I don't know, going on about 20 years. So this is my second trip to El Salvador. The first one was the initial one with Mark that he mentioned about a little over a year ago. And that was extremely eye-opening. That was my first trip to what you might call a third world nation. And it was, yeah, to say eye-opening is an understatement. Everything that Carolyn said was right on the money with regards to how people live. And so you might think that, like she said, that people are looking for ways to improve their living situation. Well, what I came to find out by meeting a gentleman out there surfing was that they're not necessarily looking for that. What they're looking for is ways to improve their community. And there was a gentleman I met there named Jorge, who spoke pretty decent English. So we were able to communicate well. And he explained to me, after showing me how to really surf his wave, he explained to me a program that he runs there. And he runs it, you know, out of his home, on the beach, wherever he can gather children that need mentoring. Jorge is a very positive influence in his community, but he relies on people such as us that come through to give him just a little bit of a boost so he can continue to help these children. He tries to mentor them on a safe and positive path throughout their lives, because as you may be aware, El Salvador is no stranger to violence. Some of these children get sucked into that, thinking that may be their only way to build a life for themselves outside of extreme poverty. And so meeting Jorge really stuck with me, and we actually became Facebook friends. And I'm able to see what he's continuing to do in that community with these children throughout the year after we're gone. And it's been an amazing experience.
Emma Reynolds, and I'm a field director for an international women's ministry, and I'm also married to your pastor. And this was a completely new experience for me. And I don't think I really knew what to expect. So even though the people in El Salvador were wonderful and positive and joyful, my heart broke for them several times. Once, you know, at the orphanage, which I can't really even talk about right now because I'll ugly cry in front of you. But the idea that there are children who go to bed sick with no one to take care of them or comfort them is heavy. And so my time with the kids really changed me in a lot of different ways. And there were lots of other moments. It built into the trip where we got a chance to really know them and see them with real eyes that see real people and a real struggle that they don't even mention. And the house that Jim was talking about, the house on the hill where we had to walk, you know, a long way, had like this beautiful view. And when we went up there, there was this, I noticed a bunch of toys, so they must have, you know, children, and it's like a broken boogie board and a gas tank and a spray bottle, and I'm like, man. So this 5-year-old boy walks up, and he immediately like was like happy to see us, and we can only speak, you know, some conversational Spanish a little bit, you know, but we're greeting him and he's so happy that we're there and he's so excited, and then he said, hold on, I have to go do something, and he ran off around the corner, and we were all standing there getting to know his parents, his family, and he came back with mangoes. And he had gone to get a bunch of mangoes, and he put them all, he brought us each a mango while we were standing there. And you notice that some of us were like wiping our hands off because we got, the mangoes are sticky. So he went and got a bowl, it looks like a dog bowl, full of water, and he just quietly stood in front of us and let us wash off the mango. And I'm like, this kid is like really great with hospitality. Like, so anyway, he stands there, and then he's like, after we're finished, you know, he stands back and he's happy, and he goes around the corner and he's playing with his toys. He's pretending to be a mechanic, and he's spraying the spray bottle all over this broken tricycle, you know, and he's acting all official. And he was just having a good time. And then when it was time for us to put the filter in and to teach them how to use the filter like his family, he came around with a notebook and a pen. And I could see that he wasn't writing any words. He was just like drawing things, you know, but he was taking notes while we were telling them how to use the filter. And I was like, he's adorable. Like we have a 6-year-old, our youngest, Evie, is 6, and she's not like super big on hospitality or like, you know, taking notes or anything. So I'm just watching this little 5-year-old boy, and I thought about it afterwards, and I feel like I have a lot to learn from this boy, this 5-year-old, because he welcomes the stranger, and he embraced us fully. And he doesn't have much, but what he has, he is obviously joyful about, and he takes delight in what he does have. I think that he shares and gives away what he does have. He hands us mangoes and takes care of us. Even though he has so little, he doesn't worry that it's not enough or we won't like it, or, you know, he doesn't care about any of that. He's just sharing. I feel like he was, you know, eager to learn and embrace something. He knows he doesn't know everything, which is a good lesson for me. And he's ready to learn something new. And I just thought, like, later on, I just thought, like, isn't that what Jesus would have been like? Like, isn't this Jesus? Isn't this what I'm supposed to be more like? In terms of the way that I embrace people and gratitude, you know, have gratitude in my life and actually live a life that reflects that gratitude. So that was big. And then it was no surprise to us when we asked for their prayer requests. And it turned out he had a wonderful father setting a good example in his home, because that's the father who turned it around. And when we asked if we could pray for him, he said, I'd like to pray for you instead. And I ugly cried all the way back to the van. It was beautiful. And it just reminded me that, like, even when we don't feel like we have enough, like money or time or knowledge, like there's always something that we can share with someone else to bless them. It doesn't have to be time. It doesn't have to be money. Like, he prayed for us, and it I feel like it changed me. And I know that that was an impactful moment for all of us. And I'm going to stop talking so I don't cry in front of you.
Yeah, for me, there were a couple of things. I think that the little boy and his father praying for us was really impactful for all of us, because it just shows that how selfless they are, that they weren't asking anything of us, although they were clearly in need, but that they were wanting to bless us, and they were grateful for what we were doing to help them. But I think one thing that was really eye-opening for me is during our first project at the orphanage, we're there playing music and games, and everything is so fun and positive. And I look over, and there are these two young boys who are fist fighting. I mean, and not like when I was growing up where you kind of wrestle around a little bit. I mean, they were punching each other in the face hard. And so me and another guy named Drew kind of went over and got into the middle of it, and we're pushing them back. And I grabbed one of the boys that was bigger by the arms to pull him away. And as soon as I grabbed his arms, the other guy hit him square in the eye really, really hard, which made me feel horrible because I was trying to break it up and I had rendered him defenseless. And of course, I'm outraged, and I'm like, who's getting a timeout? Who's getting their iPad taken away? Like, something's got to happen. Justice has to be brought into this situation. And there was nobody. If we had not been there to break up that fight, they would have just exhausted themselves beating on each other. And there was absolutely no consequences because there was no adult there maybe that's a regular occurrence. There was an adult woman there, a couple of adult women, but it was like no big deal, you know. And I thought, man, that's just horrible. How would it feel if you weren't very strong and you were in this huge enclosure? I mean, there's a huge, it looks like an encampment. There's walls all around this orphanage, and the kids just kind of wander around, and there's not a whole lot of adult supervision, and I can't imagine how unsafe I would feel in that kind of environment. Emma was holding a little girl almost the whole time that was really sick, and there was no mom to hold her. If Emma hadn't been here, this little girl would have just been sniffling and miserable by herself with no one to comfort her. And toward the end of the night, Emma almost went into a panic because she got off her lap. It was dark outside by this time, and this little girl just left. She just left and was wandering around the compound. And then in the middle of the movie night, there were two girls who got into a fist fight and were punching each other hard in the face. And again, no one was there to break it up. No one was there to tell them that they shouldn't do that. And that really broke my heart. That really messed me up as I was leaving. And I was thinking, you know, how could you allow this kind of situation to happen? And as I reflected on it, it dawned on me that, you know, we often ask God to help people, but we forget that that God sends us to do that. Like, it's not a magic trick, right? I mean, we don't just say, God, help these people, and then all of a sudden a fairy godmother shows up and breaks up fights and comforts little kids. Like Jesus tells us to go to these people, the least of these, and to help them. And Rochelle, I didn't read it before the before we begin to talk, but if you could go back to the scripture verse, and while you're finding that, I'll just say that, you know, this is a clear command for those of us that are Christians. Jesus says in Matthew 25 that we're to do some very specific things if we're going to be followers of Him, and this is what it said. This is the parable of the sheep and the goats. If you're familiar. It says, then the king will say to those at his right hand, come, you that are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, read it with me, church, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me in. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me. And then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you? There's a song by Keith Green about this parable, and he says, when did we see you? We would remember your face, Lord. When did we do this? And the king will answer them, truly I tell you, just as you did it to who? One of the least, say it with me, church, the least of these who were members of my family, you did it to me. And that's our call to mission work. And I love this trip. I really enjoy getting to know these folks and others. I didn't know Jim or Nick before the trip, and I'd run into Carolyn a couple times, but I feel like I really was able to develop some close friendships with people who have a heart to help others, just like Emma and I do. And I want to do more of this work. I think that, Nick, you were saying that how it impacted you is to do more, and I really, really want to do more of this. And I even told Emma that after I've been here for maybe 13 to 15 years, maybe my next appointment, when the kids are grown, we can go and live in El Salvador for a couple of years and be missionaries there. Emma's a little reluctant, but I keep saying, the waves are great and we have to do it for Jesus. She's not biting yet. But listen, because I'm your pastor and because I've got some experience doing this with Surfers Helping Kids, I would love to plan a second trip, to go on with you. And so if you're interested in this work, you don't have to surf. Just because there are good waves in El Salvador doesn't mean you have to surf. And most of our surfing happened from like 5:30. We got up at 5, like we were in the van at 5:30 a.m. driving to the waves. And we were done surfing by 8 or 9 o'clock, which is when most people were waking up. So if you don't surf, you can sleep in, and those of us who do can go and surf. But there's lots of opportunities there, and there's more to do than even what we did. So if you're interested in doing some mission work and going to this place with me, then please send me an email or let me know after the service, and I'll get a little list going. We also have our mission coordinators. One of them, or two of them, are Rochelle, who's in the back doing the slides, and her husband, TJ. And there's another guy named Mike Palmer, who will be here later. And they're also looking at doing some mission work in Nicaragua and Cuba. So if you're interested, please let me know.